Welcome to a Tuesday edition of Locked On NBA. On today's show, the NBA award show took place Monday night, and we'll tell you who won what.
And then we'll go over the latest news around the league and Denver's very expensive investment. It's Locked On NBA. Thank you so much for listening and for subscribing. Now let's get to the show.
You are Locked On the NBA. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On NBA, your daily NBA podcast. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm a credentialed writer covering the NBA for The Step Back. You can find me on Twitter at WC Goldberg.
And I'm David Romillo, credentialed NBA writer who's covered the league at large for SB Nation and Fansided. You can follow me and my writing on Twitter at DRomillo13.
Nikola Jokic will be picking up the tab for his Nuggets teammates, and Lance Stephenson is looking for a job. But first, the NBA rolled out the red carpet for their second annual award show, and we'll talk about last night's winners. But I've got to ask, what do you think of the format for the award show, David?
I'm not a fan, to be honest with you. I think, obviously, a lot of people have complained about the timing of the whole event taking place after the season concludes already. Obviously, the awards reflect the performances of players and or teams during the regular season. So, you know, it feels like a long time ago, even though it was obviously just mid-April that the regular season actually ended. But so much has happened with the playoffs. Teams have been eliminated. Of course, Golden State won their second straight title. It just seems odd to go rehash whether or not this player was a better defensive player of the year than X, or who was the better rookie, I don't know. I'm not sure I like it. I feel like award shows in general tend to be very fake and putting on a lot of airs because they're trying to be an entertaining event for a couple of hours and trying to rope in more mainstream fans. But I don't think the casual fan gives a damn, to be honest with you. And I don't know that they ever will. It's not the Oscar. It's not the Golden Globes.
Right.
Those things have been around for decades. And maybe the NBA is willing to make that investment. I just don't see why they are.
Award shows, like you mentioned, the Oscars and the Grammy. The award show is a flawed system in general,
sure.
Just because it but the NBA, like, they should have, this should be, there should be a point, after the regular season where this happens, because these are regular season awards, and all that we can remember is the playoffs, because the regular season ended April 11th. It's June 25th right now. I mean, it is so long and so much has happened. This would be like if the Oscars had all of their movies, right? And then that was, and then there was some sort of cutoff, and then had a bunch of more movies come out.
Well,
but
that's
those
what they do, right?
Eligible.
Don't they re-release, like, I forget exactly when the schedule takes place, but don't they re-release some of those, alleged Oscar contenders so that people could go, oh yeah, it was kind of a good movie if they didn't get a chance to see it when it first came out?
I'll take your word for it. I don't know anything about that.
No, I think they do. I think they do re-release it. But I imagine that, playing a little bit in June and kind of reconnecting what happened during the regular season so that fans and people who vote would go, oh yeah. I mean, they already collected the vote right after the regular season ended. It just, to kind of go back and rehash all these things seems so pointless. But anyway, I guess we should probably move on to talk about some of the winners of the event. What do you think about the award winners from tonight's show?
Well, let me list them out really quick, because we had Coach of the Year was Dwayne Casey, MVP was James Harden, Defensive Player of the Year, Rudy Gobert, Rookie of the Year was Ben Simmons, Sixth Man of the Year was Lou Williams, Executive of the Year goes to Daryl Morey, Most Improved Player goes to Victor Oladipo. Now, for me, the Dwayne Casey one sticks out, right, because he was fired. And there is this tradition in the NBA that every once in a while, like, Coach of the Year hasn't been the you're fired kind of situation as it has been in previous years, but maybe it's starting to come back thanks to Dwayne Casey there, winning it over Brad Stevens and Quinn Snyder. There's an argument to be made that Dwayne Casey should have won. He wouldn't have been my coach of the year. I would have went with Brad Stevens or Quinn Snyder over him, just because the best argument that I heard about Dwayne Casey was, so he decided that his team should take three-pointers, and that's why he won coach of the year, which to me was probably the best argument, because he just didn't do a great coaching job. Like, to me, if there was a most improved coach of the year, that should have went to Dwayne Casey. I thought Quinn Snyder and Brad Stevens, given the, for Brad Stevens, the amount of injuries he dealt with, you know, particularly after the first game of the season to Gordon Hayward, and then with Quinn Snyder was just the loss of Hayward.
Yeah.
And the amount of coaching he did throughout the season and what he was able to get out of Donovan Mitchell and how he was able to work with not the best kind of matches and configurations as far as the personnel he had, being able to get the most out of his group. I thought Quinn Snyder and Brad Stevens did more than Dwayne Casey did. What was your thoughts on Coach of the Year?
I think you're pretty spot on with your assessment there. I realize that the Raptors had their best record in franchise history, but you kind of saw in the playoffs that Casey may have been exposed a little bit. Obviously there was a problem with how they managed to or weren't able to defend LeBron James in the playoffs. And I know that
completely outcoached by Tyler.
Yeah.
Completely outcoached Tyler in that round.
And so that's not supposed to reflect on the job that Casey did during the regular season, but it probably also speaks to the fact that they may have just had a much more talented roster than even the group in Boston or Utah. And Casey was just able to do some things differently, tweak them just in a way. And in a weaker Eastern Conference, you could make that argument as well. And then he was able to get the most of whatever players he had on that roster. And look, to his credit, he was able to get a lot out of a bench that a lot of people didn't expect would become a high usage or a very, you know, a productive unit. And they really did produce at a high level, even without Norm Powell, who was expected to be either a starter or maybe even a key contributor off the bench. So, I mean, there's something to be said about Casey's performance. We'll see how he's able to handle a lot less talent in Detroit. Maybe it is more deserving. But I like how the other awards played out. I mean, obviously, you can make arguments for anything. An MVP, it could have gone to LeBron. It could have gone to, Kevin Durant or Steph Curry. I mean, there are a lot of different options there. Rudy Gobert is a defensive player of the year. I've seen the argument, the strongest point against him winning the award was that he did miss time due to injury. But the overall impact that he had with that team once he did come back, for all the attention that Donovan Mitchell got, and rightfully so, Gobert was an excellent force in the middle there, doing a lot defensively. And so
I thought for defensive player of the year that Anthony Davis didn't get enough.
Yeah, recognition.
I just thought that Rudy Gobert, look, he was a more impactful defender. There was the games thing. Anthony Davis, to me, at his peak, was better than Gobert's peak. Sure. He's just so fearsome of a defender. I would have given, like, on my fake awards ballot, I still ended up with Rudy Gobert as defensive player of the year.
Yeah.
I just didn't hear enough about Anthony Davis going into it. I thought that he was kind of, to me, I think he's got a real good shot to win it next year, just because his top end is so much higher than anybody else's. I don't want to spend too much time on Rookie of the Year because we've hashed, I mean, this argument's been had a lot. Mm. Ben Simmons had a real advantage of not being a rookie to win Rookie of the Year. And that really kind of, I hate the fact that we're allowed to give Ben Simmons Rookie of the Year because he's literally not a rookie. Like, he had spent an entire season with the 76ers. I really hope that we get rid of this. Do you have, just quickly, do you have an issue with Ben Simmons winning Rookie of the Year not being a rookie?
No, not really. I did. It's kind of dwindled down a little bit. But I will shout out Victor Oladipo, having covered him in Orlando and seen the player he was to become the all-star that he did in Indiana after being traded away to Oklahoma City. I mean, that phenomenal transformation there. So
The most deserving of any award tonight went to Victor Oladipo. When we talk about most improved, that's my favorite award out of all of these, is most improved, because it actually it rewards something kind of tangible. You can kind of see it. MVP is such a debate. Just like what the definition of MVP is so debatable. Mm. Defensive player of the year is just it's historically just been like a rebounds and blocks award, even though we've been doing a better job as media more recently, kind of giving it to guys like Kawhi and Draymond, who make a real impact on that end. Sixth man of the year is just like kind of like the best not great player, because you're not a starter. I don't love sixth man of the year being an award, but most improved is a real thing. Like, that's a real recognition that, and for somebody like, you know, CJ McCollum a couple years ago, and then Victor Oladipo, the fact that those are the guys that put the work in really deserve it. And Oladipo, I had a chance to talk with him this season, and I had a chance to talk with his trainer in Miami, and just you hear the commitment that he put in behind the scenes, and it's just you couldn't give it to a more deserving person than Victor Oladipo. And he's got he's completely redefined his career. I mean, this is him getting this trophy is such a statement to what he has done and
validation,
and the way that he's turned his career, validation to how he's turned his career around, because he really has.
Yeah.
All right, well, Lance Stephenson didn't win any of these awards, and he's out in Indy. LeBron doesn't want any fuss over his free agency, and the Lakers aren't being shy about wanting Paul George. We'll talk about the latest news around the league. But first, the season is over, but the offseason is underway, and things in the NBA can change every day. That means you need a daily podcast to break down everything that's happening around the league. So subscribe to Locked On NBA if you're not already on iTunes or your favorite podcasting app. The Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Nikola Jokic struck gold with the Nuggets, and we'll look at his new contract. But before we get to that, we mentioned Lance Stephenson. The Pacers have declined Lance Stephenson's option for next season. He would have been making about $4.4 million, but he will become a free agent now. Was this the right move for the Pacers to make, David, turning down Lance Stephenson? They had a pretty good group, but do you think this is the markings of a step forward for them?
I got to be honest with you. I hate Lance Stephenson. As a person, as a player, as a player, he's okay, I guess, although he's kind of stunk it up over years. But as a person, I mean, the fact that he's in the league, for as progressive as the league has been, I can never forgive Stevenson's domestic violence case from a few years ago. And to me, he's always been kind of a punk. I realize that I might be somewhat archaic in thinking along those lines. I know he's, for whatever reason, beloved by Indiana, maybe because he's wild, because he just doesn't seem to give a damn.
It's because he's the Joker. He's the Joker in the room. I mean, he blew in LeBron James's ear in a playoff game. I mean, this is a guy who did that. He's the guy who did that. Like, he's just the Joker.
No, but I get it. But no, either way, I'm glad the Pacers have declined their option. Unfortunately, it's more than likely that Stephenson will get a job elsewhere. Maybe he can go back to home and rejoin the Brooklyn Nets. That's a team that seems like really, they've got the cap space. Him and Dwight Howard in Brooklyn. Burn it down, baby. Burn it down.
Well, the Pacers have some options now because Stephenson, the role he was supposed to play there, and I don't think he's been a very good player since that one season, the 2012 season, in the 2012-13 season with Indiana. He hasn't really just been any good since then, and the return to Indiana, maybe you, if you're a Pacers fan, you hope that that sort of brought that back, and it didn't. Like, he's one of those guys who has moments,
right.
And maybe if you're a Pacers fan who's just kind of, who, like you said, adores Lance Stephenson, you focus on those moments, but he's not generally a great basketball player.
No.
They have some, they could go with Tyreke Evans. Will Barton could be available there. But the Pacers are in the market now by turning down his option, and they're in a position now that they have some cap space in the offseason.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a person that you think that they could pair next to Victor Oladipo and a young player like Miles Turner? Like, to me, I think they should be looking maybe at the power forward position. Thaddeus Young turned down his option as well, so they could use some help there. And, of course, they can use more scoring on the wing. Where do you think their focus should lie this offseason?
I don't think that Young actually has turned down that option yet. I think he's expected to, right? But I don't think that deadline has passed yet. So I think if he does, my understanding then is that they wind up getting a significant amount of cap space, somewhere around the vicinity of $30 million. So I mean, that's a lot of money. And for them, you're right. I think the power forward spot is a great option. They can throw some of that money at Aaron Gordon, who's a restricted free agent. I know that they've been linked in the past. There were rumors there about some genuine interest. And I think, look, pairing him with Oladipo, his former teammate in Orlando, makes a lot of sense. That means that core is young and going to continue to improve for a number of years.
Would that suck for Magic fans to watch their two best draft picks over the last few years to kind of emerge in Indiana? I think Aaron Gordon's the right play. I would agree with you. They have the cap space potentially here if Thaddeus Young does opt out to really make a move and make a serious offer, offer to one of these restricted free agents. I think getting somebody young that's on one of those restricted free agent deals here is kind of the way to go, right? As opposed to maybe a more veteran player who you want to pair, you know, guys like Miles Turner and Victor Oladipo. You kind of want to get another third player there that can kind of grow with them, right?
Yeah. Julius Randle's another name. I know you're a big fan of his game, and he seems, with the Lakers making moves that we'll get to later on, I think Randle's days in Los Angeles are probably numbered, so he would be another great fit. A guy who you know, with Miles Turner being able to stretch the floor, Randall not much of a shooter. He can do a lot of work down low. He's got that kind of physical presence there that I think they could take advantage of. So that's an interesting team. Look, Indiana overall isn't a team that shot a lot of threes with the exception of Darren Collison. Oladipo shot pretty well from the perimeter, but, you know, they don't rely on a three-point shot as much as other teams around the league. I think they look for the open shot wherever it might be, and they take a lot more mid-range shots than your average team. So from that perspective, I think Randall might have some space to work, I guess.
And can help push and transition along with a guy like Oladipo, who does well in that situation. Let's turn to LeBron James. Ramona Shelburne is reporting that he doesn't want to do the whole fancy pitch meeting thing like he did in 2010, especially in 2010, and like he did to a certain respect in 2014 as he's preparing for this free agency decision. Look, LeBron is a guy who's been in the league 15 years now. He gets it. I love this decision by LeBron, reportedly, that he's not going to do this whole dog and pony show and ask Pat Riley to put the rings on the table and go to the Lakers and ask them to, you know, show them like the Hall of Fame reel and do all this stuff. He gets it. He knows that Cleveland has no money and no real way to improve that team. He knows that the Lakers have max cap space for two superstars, potentially three. He knows what Philadelphia has in their young core and what Houston has in their ability to possibly beat the Warriors, and also the fact that they're going to have to work some cap gymnastics in order to get him to create enough space for LeBron in the first place. He knows all these things, and to me, what this means, it's setting up a quicker decision. So for you and I, people in the media who have to talk about this stuff, I think that's a relief. You know, you hope that this doesn't end up lingering into like the July 4th, you know, holiday or whatever it might be. The sooner the better with LeBron.
Yeah, look, he's always been the first domino to fall, or the most important, and that's certainly
biggest domino.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, there have been players in the past who've kind of just said, you know what, I'm not going to wait on LeBron to make his decision, and they go ahead and reach whatever deals they possibly can at the stroke of midnight, and you know, more power to them. But what this tells me, though, is that LeBron already knows where he's going, and to me, I think that's there's a clear favorite. I think that's why he doesn't want any elaborate meetings, because he doesn't want to waste any time. You know, I think there were still, I think when you look back at what happened in 2010, particularly, obviously he landed in Miami, went with his heart's decision to join his friend Dwayne Wade in Miami, and the opportunity to cement his legacy as a championship player for a franchise that had reached a title before, you know, and I think that was a hard one for him to make, and so that's why he was willing to entertain and see what the Knicks might be able to pull together and maybe what the Bulls might be able to pull together. This is a different scenario. Look, he's the factor. He's the controlling factor. If he's on a team, that team is likely to go to the finals, and I think he realizes that. So no need for, as you said, the dog and pony show.
Well, and if he goes to the Lakers, right, the sooner he makes his decision, he's got a lot of influence, right? He could sign with the Lakers and say – and then text Paul George, dude, I signed with LA. What are you doing?
Yeah.
Get out of Oklahoma. Come home. Like, it's a great way for him to really just take control. And if LeBron has done anything in his career, it's take control. I mean, he was a pioneer for these one-on-one deals, right? Yeah. The one-year plus one player option deal. He's using his power to its most effect. For him, this is the best way to sort of implement that power that he has built up over the last 15 years of being in the NBA. Say, look, I'm going to LA. Everybody else could figure it out. If you want to win a championship, come join me at the Lakers. There's a cap slot for you, Paul George, if you want to join. Kawhi, if you really want to come to the Lakers, let's make this happen. You know, he can do that things, and he can kind of be in behind the wheel, so to speak, on the way that goes. I think the Lakers have a great chance at it. Paul George is kind of that next domino. We spoke about the dominoes. I want to talk to you a little bit about this ESPN coverage, because there's going to be like a three-part series kind of documenting his decision here, and it's going to start, I guess, with like how he's got to this point.
His rise to NBA stardom.
It's freaking ridiculous. It's stupid. What I really want to talk about here, I'm not going to watch it.
Of course not.
I'm not wasting my time with it. Didn't Chris Paul do this?
Did he?
Sort of.
I don't remember any of that, but I just feel like the backlash from the decision was so intense that I can't imagine any player marketing the free agent decision. Well, I mean, look, he's going to get, he's already reviled, I think, in Indiana. he's not going to be too popular in Oklahoma City. He's quickly burning bridges for around the league there. I wonder, you know, I think if he does decide to join the Lakers, which it seems pretty likely, you know.
Well, that's what this seems like, right? Like, you don't do this whole three-part series just say, and I'm staying here. Right? Like, you kind of, like, that would be anticlimactic, right? You do this whole thing to say, and I'm going to Hollywood, baby. Right?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm coming back
like
home.
If I'm a Thunder fan, it is
coming back home. And that's, you know, obviously that's a very powerful narrative, as we've seen with LeBron and other players throughout NBA history.
So we talked about player options a little bit. We should, just to get some news here, some players did pick up their options here. Milos Teodosic picked up his option to stay with the LA Clippers. Danny Green opted into his $10 million deal to remain with the San Antonio Spurs, showing extreme loyalty. Good for Danny Green. And Mike Muscala will remain with the Hawks. And then Shelvin Mack, as far as more player news, was waived by the Orlando Magic. Any of these guys, who is the most impactful among that group?
Oh, God. Not much to choose from, I guess.
No.
Oh, I don't know. I honestly think I still want to see what Teodosic can do with a full season in L.A. I think there's a good opportunity from there. I mean, we saw some flashes. He doesn't play much defense at this point, and he's older than your typical rookie, but I'm curious to see what he does with a full season in L.A. and Doc Rivers coaching him up there. So I'd have to say
Teodosic. They drafted a few guards in L.A. It'll be interesting to see how he fits in there. I think Danny Green.
Yeah.
Makes a lot of sense with the Spurs, especially if they have a little bit less wing help, you know, come time through the regular season. And then Mike Muscala with the Hawks opting in, but could, you know, he's a guy who is young, has some skills you might want out of a player at that size and that cap hit. Maybe you could maybe see him worked into a trade somewhere, especially if the Hawks end up taking on some money plus assets. I could see him maybe having opted in, maybe getting traded somewhere else. It's a possibility.
Yeah.
But we've got to talk about the big news with Nikola Jokic. The Denver Nuggets are reportedly set to make their starting center a very, very rich man. But first, in addition to the daily Locked On NBA show, the Locked On Podcast Network has a daily show for your favorite NBA team. So go to iTunes or your favorite podcasting app and search for your team. Maybe, for example, the Miami Heat. And then subscribe to Locked On Heat, which David and I both host on a weekly basis. The Locked On Podcast Network, the local experts on the biggest stories. So the news broke early Monday that the Denver Nuggets would be signing center Nikola Jokic to a max deal extension worth over $106 million. To go into a little more, here is Adam Meres of Locked On Nuggets with his initial thoughts on the reported deal.
Hey everyone, this is Adam Mares of Locked On Nuggets here to give you a quick update on Nikola Jokic's contract extension. Sham Sharania of Yahoo Sports is reporting that the Denver Nuggets are prepared to offer Nikola Jokic a 5-year, $146.5 million max contract extension that would keep him here in Denver until the 2023 season. Denver had the option of picking up the final year of Jokic's rookie scale contract worth roughly $1.5 million. That would have saved Denver in the short term on their salary cap, but it would allow Nikola Jokic to become an unrestricted free agent next summer. Given Denver's lack of luck in free agency, both retaining their own players and grabbing new players on the open market, this was a no-brainer for Denver, being able to solidify Jokic as the cornerstone of their team going forward. He remains underrated by a vast majority of NBA fans and even NBA analysts. He led the Denver Nuggets in points, rebounds, and assists. He shot 40% from behind the three-point line on 3.5 attempts. He's one of the most efficient post-up players in the NBA, as well as one of the best offensive and defensive rebounders, and an elite mid-range jump shooter. And the Nuggets were 10 points per 100 possessions better with him on the court than off, far and away the best mark of all of the players on the Nuggets roster. Denver now has a salary cap issue. Bringing back Will Barton for the mid-level extension alone would leave Denver with a massive tax bill, far higher than you'd expect for a team that has yet to make it into the leap into contention, somewhere around $50 million in luxury tax payments alone. Kenneth Faried, who's set to make $13.7 million next season, Wilson Chandler, $12 million, Darrell Arthur, $7.4 million, are all candidates for Denver to try to unload on a team with salary cap space, because they are all large contracts in the final year of their deal, expiring contracts. For Kenneth Faried is the most likely player to be traded, as he has been cut entirely from the rotation. Denver does have a large collection of players and draft picks to be able to sweeten the pot in any potential deal to get a team to bite on a trade for one of those players, including all of their first-round picks in the upcoming drafts, as well as Juancho Hernangómez, Monte Morris, Malik Beasley, Trey Lyles, and Tyler Lydon, all young prospects with upside that a team might be willing to bite on. Jokic has been the lowest-paid player on the Nuggets roster for each of the last three seasons, minus the two-way contract guys. He's been the league's best value contract since he entered, earning just $1.5 million per year to date. So it'll be interesting to see how he responds to being the highest-paid player on the team. He's already assumed most of the roles of the team's best player and floor leader, but it'll be interesting to see if there's any new dynamics now that he is going to be the highest-paid player in the locker room.
So, David, I know that you're a big fan of Jokic's game. Was he worth this kind of investment for the Nuggets?
That is the eternal debate, right? Jokic, I think, despite his short NBA career, has already become not necessarily a controversial player, but one that inspires a wealth of opinion. You know, for a lot of people who don't watch him play, and even for some who do, he tends to be a little underrated, I think. He's not a significant defender, perhaps, and you know, he's an inconsistent shooter at times, and he does make some flashy passes, but he is the focal point of the Nuggets offense. And from that perspective, as Adam talked about in that clip, you know, he's going to be the future of the franchise. He's going to be the guy that they build around. You know, there's a lot of questions regarding the rest of the roster, but at least that is going to be cemented moving forward. Now, I don't know that Jokic fills the emotional leadership void. I think that's something that's going to be somebody else has to step up in that regard. Maybe a veteran like Paul Millsap, maybe one of the younger players like Gary Harris, who's somewhat quiet, Jamal Murray, perhaps. Either way,
Donovan Mitchell would have been a great fit there.
Salt in the wound. Good for them. you're absolutely right. But, but now they've got Jokic there, and I think he's an excellent fit for what they're trying to do there. And he's an excellent player. And I don't know if worth it is the right terminology, but I can understand why they made that kind of investment for a young player that still has a lot of upside and a lot of room to grow and has already shown incredible flashes.
And, you know, you mentioned why he's kind of a polarizing figure. He's one of the great Twitter debate objects that we have right now. But, you know, and it's because of the defensive limitations that he has. And for, you know, to his credit, it's not for lack of effort or anything. He's a big, slow guy. Yeah. And there's just only so much of his ceiling you can have on the defensive end. But offensively, he's borderline transcendent. He is a great passer. He can shoot the ball. He's just got such a phenomenal feel for the game that really just stands out when you watch him. You watch the Nuggets, you can recognize how special he is on the offensive end pretty fairly quickly.
Yeah, I think Denver's lack of postseason success is probably what's hurt that opinion the most, right? I mean, nobody sees – the casual fan doesn't see him in the playoffs or in the postseason. They're kind of just one of those also-rans that unfortunately hasn't made the playoffs for a long time, and so you don't really see his game on a bigger stage.
That's a good point. But if you're the Nuggets, look, I like the extension. I'm a fan of it because you really don't have another choice. I mean, you draft this guy Nikola Jokic in the second round. He pops in the NBA for you basically out of nowhere. You struck gold here. You hope that somebody like Jamal Murray is able to also pop here pretty soon. And I like I like Murray. I'm a fan of his game. I think, you know, for point guards, it takes them a little while in the NBA. And I think he's going to do well for them as far as spacing the floor and as far as a good partner next to Jokic. And they've got a nice team around him. You had to do this if you were Denver. I mean, what are you going to do? Not extend him? And this is the price of a guy like Jokic. I mean, if you have a center who's able to contribute on three different levels offensively, like Jokic is able to do, you pay those guys. That's just what that's what those guys do. That's what is demanded out of these guys from a skill perspective, and you just sort of bank on him being young. You look, you guys like Marc Gasol and Joakim Noah were not the fastest, quickest, most athletic centers, but they were defensive players of the year because they had such a great feel for the game on the defensive end. You hope, if you're Denver, that Jokic's feel for the game on the offensive end translate at some point to the defensive end, and he can just be super smart like he is on the offensive end and just kind of be in the right place at the right time and have enough of a defensive impact. maybe you won't ever be the defensive player of the year, but if you can get the average, what he's able to give you offensively is totally worth it.
Absolutely. But it also brings up the point, as Adam does, that, you know, now Denver has a lot of choices to make. So they've got an interesting offseason with the kind of money they're committing to Jokic, Millsap, and others. There's a problem there with their salary cap. They need to make some room, and we'll see whether or not they're able to unload some of those contracts. They've got a bevy of draft picks in the future that they might be able to attach. So it's going to be an interesting offseason for Denver, and they still have holes on their roster to fill. So let's stay
tuned. It's going to come down to the development of guys like Murray and Gary Harris and those guys. Like, if those guys take a substantial step forward, I mean, that's everything that they're really going to need.
Yeah.
All right, well, that's all we have for today. You can subscribe to Locked On NBA on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. We'll be back next Tuesday. In the meantime, you can find us on Locked On Heat. Thank you for listening. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.